Welcome to the Everyday PM podcast, the podcast where we discuss project management principles for your everyday life. My name is Ann Campia, and I'm a certified project/program manager with a decade of experience working in healthcare, retail, consumer goods, and tech industries. I am so excited to welcome back to the podcast Greg Christensen, who is the vice president of projecthub.com. You may remember that he joined us when we did the first installment of this kind of PM project management coffee chat. So cheers, Greg. I think that was a huge success. I had a lot of fun doing that with you. I'm looking forward to whatever questions you're going to bring forth to the coffee house today. So Greg, just to set everybody up and introduce yourself to our audience, I know that you're not only the VP of projecthub.com, but you also have project management software experience, right? You have nearly two decades of experience in CMMS space, extensive facilities, maintenance, and building management experience. So if I have not completely botched your introduction with our audience, please take a brief moment to introduce yourself.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. My name's Greg Christensen. I work at projecthub.com, and that is a project management solution. It's designed to really eliminate the complexity when you're dealing with projects of any kind. The CMMS background, computerized maintenance management software, did that for a long time. I'm still very connected to that space. So I'm kind of combining the two, and that's how you and I met originally, where I had questions about, let's talk about project management. Why should I try to figure it out? I'm going to go to a subject matter expert like you. So really enjoyed the last session, and I'm looking forward to this one.
Yeah, same here. So the same thing that we did, just to set the stage for everyone listening in, we are going to try to create a realistic picture of what a coffee break would look like between two colleagues, in which case you only have limited time to chat. And in this case, we will set the timer for 20 minutes. And in our last installment, I was long-winded, so I'm going to very much try to be within the time, but we'll see how many questions we can get through in this installment. Right, Greg?
Yep, we're gonna do it.
All right, here we go. So I'm just going to set the timer and go.
All right, so first question. You've talked a lot in different sessions that I've watched and in our recent session that we did about postmortem when it comes to projects and being able to essentially unpack that project, because that's going to help you in the future. So I want to pick up right there and ask, what are your top five postmortem outcomes that we should always document and track? Meaning we're doing these five every time.
Well, okay, so let's start with, five, that's a very definitive number here. So let's go with number one. I think you should definitely document the responses you get from the three simple questions you are supposed to ask in every postmortem, which is what went well, what did not go well, and what could be better next time. Very simple questions, but that is essentially kind of your foundation for running a postmortem. That's the feedback you want from your team. And so as you collect that feedback, whether it's through a survey or a coffee chat, whatever it takes, you want to make sure that all of those responses are documented somewhere, wherever you're comfortable. I would say the second thing, to your point, documentation is key, right? So you're asking, what are the outcomes that we need to document? All of them. I know that's a little catch-all, but I highly suggest you figure out how you're going to document everything. I think that's, again, the foundation of what you're doing, is you want to create something that can be reviewed in the future and looked upon for many, many projects thereafter, right? So within your documentation, I would say, as you analyze the responses, start to formulate what your action plan is going to be, right? So now you've got feedback. Greg's got 20 feedback. Pieces of feedback from his team. They're of varying, situations, some positive, negative, some are just process improvement responses, whatever it may be. You want to start to formulate your action plan, because not only do you want the feedback documented, but you want to document what are the next steps. What are we doing now that we understand what the team is suggesting as critical feedback that could impact future launches, whether it's updating the way that you document your project charter? Is it a system improvement where they want the workflow to be a little bit more efficient? You just want to start to create, as you would do in your personal lives, as well as your professional lives, what's that to-do list, that actionable list, and have that documented somewhere. Within that list, you also want to make sure that you have the issue clearly outlined. And if you don't, it's okay to go back to that team member who gave the feedback. Or if you did an anonymous survey, just maybe brainstorm with the entire team. Okay, we got this piece of feedback. It's not very clear what is needed here. What do you all think? But you want to make sure that there's clear ownership. You have an idea of what the action is that you're taking, and you have set some sort of deadline in the future for some action, again, to be taken against that particular issue, that task that you've noted. So I think that's two, maybe two and a half or three things that I've given you. Four, I would say, is you also want to start pulling the risks. Some people are going to highlight, oh, well, every single time we do a project like this, this happens, and it happens every time, and I don't understand why we haven't done something about it. You're going to get some part of the feedback that's going to be potential risk to future projects of the same project type and complexity and scale and scope, et cetera. So why not create a risk and issues log where, even though this risk is not as specific to the next project, the project itself, at least the archetype of the project coming, is similar. So you still want to consider if that risk can apply to the next project, right? And so if it's something that's in that realm of possibility, just keep it on your risk tracker. In that case, you may want somebody, if you have a risk manager who's kind of associated with tracking these risks, just have it there for visibility and have it as a point of reference as you kick off similar projects. If not, you as the PM can obviously maintain the list, but make sure you're also logging your risks. And then the last thing I would say in terms of documentation is it's one thing to do a postmortem, document everything. The next step that I see a lot of organizations kind of fail at is, how do you create a repository for the information that you've obtained from the postmortem? And what I mean by repository is, Greg, you've done everything. You've gone through your action plan, you've logged the risks, everything is with Greg, right? But now what happens if there's a whole nother PM team that's working on a similar project, but you're not on it? Or what happens if Greg decides to leave the organization? You need to have some way for other project managers in the community to be able to access this information so that they can learn and apply it to their projects. So this is a really challenging one, Greg, because again, I don't know many people who have done it well, but there are systems out there. I don't know if projecthub.com does it, but there are systems out there where you can utilize some sort of just kind of repository or search engine or something, to where if I'm Anne and I'm looking for, a small scale project where we worked on a small construction site that was 6 to 8 months long, and I was interested in seeing what happened to a similar project a few years back, I should be able to go through, find that postmortem documentation and walk through it myself. So I would say the fifth thing is to figure out how to build some sort of repository that all the PM community can access.
I definitely like that one. So I've got two. So building on that, and then I'm going to lead into question number two, because something you said previously is actually really good for question number two. So this thing you're talking about right now, though, with the knowledge transfer, I think it applies to not just project management, but really everything. So we don't want to go down that wormhole. But I think even if solutions people are using out there aren't necessarily having a piece of that software where you can go and look at those previous events, you've got to keep something in the way of a living document, the concept of a drive that's corporate wide. Mm-hmm. And you have to package up all of your postmortem details, And yeah. at some point it'll smooth out and people will be able to actually search through it quickly, because you'll see kind of the usual suspects. What are we typically seeing? Mm-hmm. Which then with that, I'm going to go back heading into question number two. You were talking about risk. And I think that is really important when it comes to this concept of pre-mortem, which mm-hmm. again was something that we talked about. So one of the things that I put in, this is essentially what the question was, is when it comes to our pre-mortem or post-mortem process, how do we really take more of the same, but stay tight on the Q&A with our group, right? So you're doing post-mortem Q&A, you don't want to call anybody out too hard. You're doing pre-mortem because you're about to start a project. What's a good general practice in your opinion on how to keep yourself focused on doing that without crushing people?
The project manager has a lot of control over setting that type of environment. And what I will say, having done them, having run pre and post-mortems myself, is you can only control so much. There are going to be team members who have been harboring on something that happened to them on the project from day two. And now you're on day 305 and you're thinking, how did they remember that in detail? But you just, you know, it's the human factor that is often surprising, but it also makes this exercise fun. What you can do is set some ground rules. When you kick off your pre or post-mortem, this is about our opportunity to talk about what can be better and really get rid of that question or that old, you know, that repetitive, this happens every time, so I expect it's going to happen again, and there's nothing we can do about it. You know, that's the mentality we are trying to break by doing this exercise. And so set some ground rules, do what you can to control it. If names start to be called, you know, kind of diffuse it, or, you know, flip it and say, well, you know, while Greg may have been a factor in this part of the process that may have not been have done as well as, you know, previous times, he has offered a solution to how we can fix this in the next one, or whatever. However you can kind of spin the narrative so it continues to be this really positive environment. I have even gone to lengths of playing music, like cheerful music, as folks were writing down or thinking about, you know, what went well and what didn't go well. Set the stage however you can so that people feel comfortable, but also make sure that the ground rules are always in front of them. Print it out on paper, have it on the table, have it on the board. Just make sure it's around. And again, you can only do so much, as you know, keep it to generalizations, make sure there's no name calling. You can only do so much of setting those ground rules, but you know, be okay and be ready to deal with probably, you know, Greg, who has been thinking about this thing that happened to him and is ready to unleash it in your pre or post-mortem. It's going to happen, and that's just okay.
Yeah. And I, you know, it's really obvious. I think what we're talking about here, everybody thinks it, everybody tries to be mindful. I just wanted to get a strategy from you, because one of the things that really stands out for me about you that I hope a lot of people out there that consume your podcast and work with you are figuring out rather quickly is that's one of your, what we kind of, I said it, but I hope you agree, it's one of your superpowers is mm-hmm. that you can come into these environments super busy, crazy, stressful, not stressful, mix it all up, and you kind of stay pretty even. You can diffuse a lot of things. And I think that's great. That's why I wanted to ask that question. You. And I know it's different than what I sent you. So,
that's fine. I'd rather right. go with the off the cuff here.
Good deal. So, the next question. So I was really thinking about this when it comes to projects. Is there such a thing as hidden stakeholders in your experience? And are those more common to a specific type of project or a specific industry? And just to be clear, a hidden stakeholder would be a stakeholder that nobody could have identified, And as you're moving through the project or you've delivered the project, you're now finding out that there were some fringe stakeholders, fringe not being a negative thing, but they were on the fringe, but extremely important. And now they're coming back saying, well, hey, what about this and this? Those were critical components to the project. Anything you have on that?
Love this question, Greg. This is definitely something you chat over coffee. What I would say is, I like your definition of hidden stakeholders. I hadn't heard of that yet, but I don't think that it is specific to a project type or industry or sector. What I will say, having worked as a PM across very different industries, is that it happens. And the best example I can think of is you are limited in time to plan, which means your stakeholder register or, you know, that you're aware of is you've done your best in the time that you've had to kind of go through who's involved in the project, who has a stake in the project. But you're bound to have somebody who had a coffee chat of their own. Usually, I would say executive level, leadership level type, that, you know, they go out with the other VPs and they mention a project that they're working on. And that person says, oh, well, I'd actually like to be a part of that conversation. Can you pull me in? Because I think that's, you know, X, Y, and Z for my business needs. And sometimes it's just as organic as that. And it's a very quick conversation that people at that level have had. And they go to the project manager and say, oh, well, Greg, now, you know, the VP of Project Hub now wants to come in and review where we're at on the project. And you could be like 2 weeks from launch or whatever you're doing, right? Two weeks from closing the project. And all of a sudden this person comes in. So what I will say is that's a very realistic thing where these hidden stakeholders just kind of come out of nowhere. I've seen it in the creative space. I've seen it in the retail space. I've seen it in the consumer goods space. The best you can do is analyze, really, and this is the beauty of being a PM, is you're in the position to be able to present this information to, let's say, the project sponsor and tell them, well, sure, Greg can come in, but just so you know, if there are any scope changes at this point, it's going to cost us X, Y, and Z. And really just lay it out from a data perspective. What's the impact going to be if there are changes at this point in time? What's the financial impact, right? If you're making significant changes, is it worth having this person come in as a hidden stakeholder and now have some sort of stake in your project? Work with your project sponsor, work with your leadership kind of counterpart to have that conversation. And if ultimately they want to bring that person in, just prepare your project team for there could be changes here. Here's what we may expect, and just have them ready for that. But utilize who you're close to that is at least kind of a match in levels, if that makes sense, with the person that's asking to come in. And not to say like it's always leadership teams. Sometimes it's just a team that you completely didn't think there was any impact there. And that can sometimes just fall on us, right? Like, oh, I didn't think that team was impacted. And wow, now I'm learning that they might be. So it could actually be saving you at the end of it, that this team became aware of the project and wanted to be involved. So just really consider the situation and figure out how to react from there.
Got it. And that, I think that's almost what I expected. And I felt like personally that hidden stakeholders definitely exist. They don't even know they exist until they exist. So it's just a factor to be mindful of and have some strategies around it, regardless of who it is, to kind of meet them where they are and see where they can have their say. And as long as there's not going to be excessive scope creep, then you can probably help them out along the way.
Yeah,
exactly. All right. So next question. What are some common yet preventable blind spots? And we talked about blind spots previously. So just some common ones. It doesn't have to be 5 or 10, just a couple of them that you think are really common that we out here should all be kind of looking out for.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. It's something that we talked about. Like you said, I think we can continue to dig in there because I'm hoping that I'm capturing what is trending versus, you know, what's just happening to Anne. But what I will say is, anytime you can prepare for your meetings or plan ahead is going to be helpful for you to, this is not a specific blind spot, as more of a tip as to how to avoid these blind spots, but prepare for your meetings, plan ahead, know your scope well. Blind spots could be you fail to capture or listen to, and I want to emphasize that you fail to very, very carefully listen to what your stakeholders' needs are. You may have made some assumptions, right, in what the stakeholder told you that they wanted out of the project. And so when it comes to delivering whatever the output is for them, they say, oh, this is not what I asked for. And so blind spot there is really make sure that you're going and reiterating to your stakeholder, okay, so I've documented, this is what you're expecting to come out of the project. I just want you to confirm that we're aligned and we'll move forward with the execution of it. So oftentimes we're just running so fast and we don't take a second to do that. And as a PM, it's natural for us to want to make assumptions. And so it's just taking a second, pause for a second, see around the corner so it's not a blind spot, and just create that alignment before you move forward. And those are things that you want to do regularly, whether it's professionally or personally, I would say. The other thing is, gosh, and then I listed more of tips rather than actual blind spots, but what I would say is make sure that you have just a general awareness of where your project is at, right? Because oftentimes we're running so fast that we don't see, I don't know, like a car or somebody on a bicycle coming ahead, right? So it's one of those things where you just want to make sure that you continue to be aware, just be aware so that you can figure out where those blind spots can be. I think I would just kind of say, refer back a few minutes ago when we were talking about hidden stakeholders, because I think that's also a good one. As much as possible, take the time to thoroughly vet your stakeholder list so that you can make sure that you've captured everybody that needs to be involved in the project.
Good, good. And I, on that one, I would add one thing, because I'm thinking back to the situations I've been in, you know, regardless of whether it's project management, CMMS, because everything's really a project, right? Yep. Uh-oh.
I know. It again. We're so close. I feel like we can get last one.
All right. Let's, so I'm not going to throw my comment in other than look look for someone. I would say, look for someone that's, you know, say part of that arm of the organization, or someone that's, you know, pretty well plugged in with this area where you made a huge assumption, and don't be afraid to ask them for insight. You know, how does this really work? If it's a project related to marketing, and I think I know some things about marketing, but I go to someone in marketing and I say, well, I think this and this, is there anything I'm missing? And is there anything I didn't think to ask you that, even though you don't know what I don't know, you can throw out for me? Basically the same thing. Mm-hmm. So keeping those lines of communication open, being mindful of bandwidth, I think is a good strategy as well to kind of fix or identify or look out for blind spots. So number five.
Yeah. When Greg and I are rushing back to the office as we're drinking our coffee and talking about this last question. So let's do it.
Yeah. So when and why do you save a project versus scrapping it? And this is really broad. So I was just looking for some insight from you on, I'm in the middle of a project and it's in distress. There's some problems. And what are the ones that would tell you immediately you got to scrap this versus ones that don't let that fool you? You need to finish that project.
Yeah, that's a wonderful way to wrap this conversation up. And it's funny because I actually interpreted your question a little bit differently than the way you just described it. So what I would say is it ultimately comes down to what is the benefits or the value coming back to the organization, right? There comes a point in your project where if you take your KPIs or however you're measuring success on your project, and as a project manager, you're looking at it, let's just make this example very simple. You're looking at your scope, you're looking at your timeline, you're looking at your budget, you're looking at your resources, And if all of them, based on your metrics, are showing in the red, it may be time to have a conversation with your project sponsor and see, is this still worth the investment that we're making? Is the outcome still worth the investment that we're making? You know, you can deal with these issues individually sometimes. Resource burnout, you know, have a conversation with the team. Do we need to add more resources? Do we need to, you know, find other avenues for the team members so they're not working 24 hours a day? When it's things like that, you may be able to troubleshoot it. And as a PM, you should be looking around those corners again to try to identify these before your project metrics are all in the red, right? Now,
yeah.
I say if you look at it and your benefits realization coming back to the company is no longer enough to say this is enough for us to invest in, you may want to scrap the project, right? Now, if there's something that is going to pay off insurmountably to the company, a big change that you know is going to be painful, it might take a little longer than you thought, you might have to throw more resources or dollars at it just to get it done, but you know that this is something that needs to happen for the company, and you still see the value in the investment, then move forward with it. I think that's hopefully in its most simplistic form, that kind of gives you an idea of how to measure whether or not to move forward with a project.
It does. And I came up with the whole question based simply on this. In, let's say, a product-led organization, from a product management perspective, you have a solution that's in place with X number of clients, high number of clients, need, want, have communicated such a feature. You start the project to deliver and develop the feature. You hit one huge brick wall that is very difficult to solve, and they tabled the project. All clients must wait, even though some of them very big said, if we don't get it, we're going to be leaving.
Wow.
And then they start doing other things. So that's where that really came from, because I think people are moving fast, like you say. So we have to be mindful that we're busy, but you got to take a few moments here and there just to kind of be on the lookout. And when you assess a project and you're trying to figure out, stick with it, or is this one going away? I think the ideas that you gave are really important, especially if you're looking at what's the real outcome, what's the real benefit, and what's the real necessity. If we stop now, is this problem going to stay and just keep crushing us? That one you might want to keep running with. So
that makes sometimes sense. Sometimes that's the best decision you can make for yourself. Yeah, it's hard because a lot of people invest time and money and just hours of the day on something. But if you come to that realization, I think the biggest thing you can do is just make the call.
Yeah, that's good. And it's my fault that we ran over on the clock, I think, because I threw in some extra stuff. So
I think we came close. That's how organic this conversation needs to be, though, Greg. Like, we could get to Starbucks and the line is like 10 people in and you're waiting longer than you thought. So that's just as much as we can create this realistic situation. I think we were pretty close to 20 minutes, though, I would say.
It's close.
For sure.
Yeah. And we'll do it again, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I love this. So if Greg or if anyone else, you know, that's listening in on this has any questions that they want us to cover, I'm happy to bring it onto the podcast. So please feel free to send it my way, send it Greg's way. Greg's already come up with some fantastic questions that I think everyone who's listening can benefit from just hearing a perspective of a working program project manager. And Greg, you provide such great insight yourself. So I really do appreciate you.
Thank you.
And the thoughtfulness in your responses and just how great these conversations have been. So I'm super excited for our next one.
Me too. I appreciate doing it again, and we'll come up with another one pretty soon.
Yeah, absolutely. So that will do it for Greg and I in this installment of the Everyday PM, our Project Management Coffee House edition. If folks want to continue the conversation with you, Greg, where can they find you online?
I'm on LinkedIn. You can also go to projecthub.com if you want to sign up for access to our pre-launch version of the system. You can get in touch with me that way as well. But LinkedIn, hit me up and you know, just send me a message or a connection request, maybe with a little info on what you want to talk about. I'd be happy to help. And of course, everyone should know, if you want to get in touch with Ann, it's the everydaypm.com or the Everyday Project Manager podcast.
Awesome. I love that you've just plugged me, Greg. This is fantastic. This partnership is great. You can also find me online as well. And definitely do check out projecthub.com. I've done just my kind of preliminary looking at the system. And to be honest, from my rankings of what I've seen, there's a lot of functionality there that will just really take kind of the clutter and complexity of the things that we have to track on a day-to-day kind of out of the picture. And just from a visual standpoint, it is incredible the work that you have done on this website, Greg. So I want to commend you for that. And definitely need to just bring you back on when projecthub.com actually launches to, you know, share that with our audience as well. So congratulations on that. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much.
So everyone, please support the Everyday PM podcast by giving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcasting platform you're listening in on. The Everyday PM podcast is also available on Spotify, Google Play, Breaker, Overcast, Pocket Casts, everything, pretty much everything. You can also watch the visual version of this with Greg and I on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/AnnCampia. While you're there, take a moment to like this video, subscribe to the channel, and click the notifications bell just so that you know when new content is up. All right. Well, thanks so much for joining Greg and I in this installment of the Everyday PM podcast. And until next time, take care. Greg, this one's on you, right?
It is.